Jai Advaita Chandra Jai Guru Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya
Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Reading from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhyalila chapter 17. I think my verses start with number 83. Okay, thank you. So we can do the Bengali together until text number 86, and then we'll do it responsibly. Okay. Everyone together. Say, Kale tapanamishra kare gangasam prabhu deki haila tanya kitu vishwagram. At that time, Tapanamishra was taking his bath in the Ganges, and he was astonished to see the Lord there. Everyone together. Purve suni yachi prabhu karya chena sanyas nisaya kriya hala hudaya yadvas. Tapanamishra then began to think, I have heard that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has accepted the renounced order. Thinking this, Tapanamishra became very jubilant within his heart. Prabhu charana dari karene rodan prabhu kare utana kaila alingana. He then clasped the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and began to cry. The Lord raised him up and embraced him. Okay, this one responsibly. Prabhu lana gela vishveshvara darashane.
Prabhu lana gela.
Prabhu lana gela vishveshva darasane.
Prabhu lana gela vishveshva darasane.
Radical Imam, maybe you should do it. You know how to do it? You do it. He's been good. Go ahead, you do it. We'll follow you.
Prabhu
lana.
Huh? Yeah, Prabhu lana.
Prabhu lana ge Prabhu laya gela vishveshvara darshane.
Prabhu laya gela vishveshvara darshane.
Tave asi deke bindu madhava charane.
Tave asi deke bindu madhava charane.
Tave asi deke bindu madhava charane. Prabhu lanya gela vishveshvara darshane darasane.
Prabhu lanya gela vishveshvara darshane.
Tave asi deke bindu madhava charane.
Tave asi deke bindu madhava charane.
Prabhu lanya gela vishveshvara darshane.
Prabhu lanya gela vishveshvara darshane.
Taking the Lord.
Gela.
He went. Vishveshvara Darashane. To visit the temple of Vishveshvara. Tabe. Thereafter. Asi.
Coming.
Deke.
Si.
Bindu Madhava Charane.
Bindu Madhava.
The lotus feet of Bindu Madhava. Translation. Tapanamishra then took Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to visit the temple of Vishveshvara. Coming from there, they saw the lotus feet of Lord Bindu Madhava. Please repeat. Tapana Mishra.
Tapana Mishra.
Then took Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Then took Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
To visit the temple of Vishveshwara.
To visit the temple of Vishveshwara.
Coming from there.
Coming from there.
They saw the lotus feet of Lord Bindu Madhav.
They saw the lotus feet of Lord Bindu Madhav.
Purple by Srila Prabhupada. This Bindu Madhava is the oldest Vishnu temple in Varanasi. Presently, this temple is known as Vaini Madhava, and it is situated on the banks of the Ganges. Formerly, five rivers converged there, and they were named Dutapapa, Kirana, Saraswati, Ganga, and Jamuna. Now only the river Ganges is visible. The old temple of Bindu Madhava, which was visited by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, was later dismantled by Aurangzeb, the great Hindu-hating emperor of the Mughal dynasty. In the place of this temple, he constructed a big majida or mosque. Later, another temple was constructed by the side of the mosque, and this temple is still existing. In the temple of Bindu Madhava, there are deities of 400 Narayan and the goddess Lakshmi. In front of these deities is a column of Sri Garuda, and along the side are deities of Lord Ram, Sita, Lakshman, and Sri Hanumanji. In the province of Maharashtra, it is a state known as Shatara. During the time of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the native prince belonged to the Vaishnav cult. Being a Brahmin, he took charge of worshipping the deity. He was known as Srimanta Balasaheba Panta Maharaj. The state still bears the expenditure for temple maintenance. The first king in this dynasty to take charge of worship in the temple 200 years ago was Maharaj Jagat Jivana Roy Saheba. I think I'm reading two more. Do you know if I'm reading two more?
No.
No, I'm not?
No.
Okay. All right. Om Agana Pramandas Yagana Manas Nasa. Chakshara Manatam Yena Tasmai Shri Ravayad Maha Shri Chaitanya Manobastam Stapatam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadasas Swapadam Tikam. I actually went to Benares, Varanasi, when I was before I was a devotee. I was a dirty hippie, and this is in the 1960s, before any of you were even thought of. And I went swimming in the Ganga. I wasn't a devotee. I was an ignorant person, more than even now. And I got very sick. I remember in India, I was so sick. Can you hear? I got very sick in India. I lost so much weight, got dysentery. But anyway, that was my experience of Varanasi, so it seems strange, burning all these dead bodies. But of course, it's a very sacred place. And there are many temples there, as it says here. Because Shankaracharya, he established one of his most important temples in Varanasi. And that was in the 7th century. And it's the place of Sanskrit scholarship, Varanasi. The best Sanskrit school, from what I've heard, is in Varanasi. There's actually a lot of resurgence of interest in Sanskrit, which I've read about. They have 11 Sanskrit schools in Australia, believe it or not. Yeah. And there's a few in London, and they're called the James School of James. School, but they teach Sanskrit, and they say that it really helps the children become more absorbed in their studies, very beneficial for their intelligence. So, of course, we know that Aurangzeb, he destroyed many temples, and he destroyed this temple here in Varanasi. So one of the main mosques there is very unusual, because the bottom part of the mosque is actually built on the remains of a Hindu temple, a Vaishnav temple, I should say. And the top part is a mosque with minarets. So, but Aurangzeb, Prabhupada characterizes him as a Hindu-hating Muslim. He was very powerful. And there was one book written, Prabhupada explains, a book written about Aurangzeb. Aurangzeb was the hero, although he's really an anti-hero. But he wrote this book, this professor from Calcutta, I can't remember his name, and he was describing Aurangzeb's activities. And Aurangzeb was the main person in the book. But the book was entitled Shah Jahan. So Prabhupada, he was explaining that when this man was asked why, if Aurangzeb was a hero, because he was a hero to some, because he established Shia Islam, Islam by the sword. But why was the book called Shah Jahan if the main hero was Aurangzeb? So Prabhupada explained, the reason was that Aurangzeb, he locked up his father. His name is Shah Jahan. And his father was, he built the Taj Mahal. Taj Mahal is one of the seven wonders of the world, at least in the old days. I don't know what they are nowadays. But it's one of the seven wonders of the world, although I don't think it's that fantastic personally. But anyway, he established it in memory of his wife, the Mumtaz, who's very attached to his wife. And so he was locked up there by his son, Aurangzeb. And his son, he killed his brothers. There was a war of succession. Who would succeed Shah Jahan? And there was a war between the brothers. And Aurangzeb became victorious. So he killed his brothers. So Shah Jahan, he was locked up. His wife had died. And his children, his one son killed the other sons. Just imagine how that would feel. It'd be very depressing. But he was the hero because he tolerated it all. But Aurangzeb was very wealthy. I was looking at Wikipedia about Aurangzeb. Not really spiritual knowledge, but anyway, Prabhupada liked history as well. He would ask devotees dates of like certain battles, like the Battle of Hastings. Anyone know when the Battle of Hastings is? Anyone know about the Battle of Hastings?
1066.
It's when the French try to conquer the British, right? Huh? Normandy. The Normandies came over. Anyway, so Prabhupada liked us to know a bit of history. So, you know, Aurangzeb, he was very powerful. He actually was the most powerful of all the Mughal rulers. And apparently, because concurrently, Louis XIV. Have any of you been to Versailles? Versailles is a very elaborate building. That was the court of Louis XIV. And so it said that Aurangzeb, his income, the revenue at that time, was actually 350 million pounds per annum in the 17th century. But just imagine how much that would be worth now. So that was his revenue. And his income was 10 times greater than Louis XIV, who was the Emperor of France. So he's very powerful. And it was much bigger than the whole of Western Europe combined. It was actually the greatest, wealthiest place in the world, India at the time. And so Aurangzeb, he was controlling, but he was a demon. He killed so many Hindus. He made, you know, Brahmin children eat meat in front of their parents just to desecrate the demoniac. Anyway, he's not the main subject of the class, but it's quite interesting how he became so powerful. And one time there was one pirate, actually, because he would send a lot of money to Mecca. And there was one British pirate, and he would send the money on ships. And this British pirate, he sank and he captured the wealth from the flagship of Aurangzeb. And there was a bounty on his head, which was like a huge bounty. They never caught him, apparently. Anyway. So this temple that he destroyed, Bindu Madhava Temple, I was trying to find out what Bindu Madhava would mean. Bindu, anyone know what it means? A drop, yeah, it means a drop. It means a drop.
A drop.
Yeah, I asked Pushkar, that's what he said. So Bindu Sarovara, Bindu Madhava. So Madhava means the husband of the goddess of fortune. So generally, when we think of the goddess of fortune, the husband, we think of Lord Narayan. But of course, the Lakshmi, she's an expansion of Radharani. So the real goddess of fortune is Radharani. So, you know, when we sing Jaya Radha Madhava, Prabhupada is singing of Krishna. And I was reading about the deities in Mayapur, Radha Madhava deities. Prabhupada had Radha Madhava deities, and they were with Prabhupada when his entourage went to India the first time. Somehow they had these Radha Madhava deities. And Prabhupada, he introduced the chanting of Radha Madhava in 1971 in Gorakhpur, apparently. He went through it three times. They didn't get it the first time. He did it again. The third time, he became very emotional and he stopped singing. He was explaining how Radha Madhava describes Krishna, that Krishna is the supreme enjoyer, that everything he does is for enjoyment. So at that time, they actually named the deities of Gorakhpur Radha Madhava. And on that particular occasion, he was glorifying Kausalya, who was one of Prabhupada's disciples. And she was cleaning the floor very nicely. So, you know, she was doing a great job. But the next day, Prabhupada said, "What's wrong with you? You're cleaning the floor like a crow taking a bath." So then he got down and he showed her how to clean the floor. And everybody was, you know, amazed. Prabhupada, he said, "First of all, you put lots of water." Of course, they didn't have carpets. It's all marble. Lots of water, and then you wash it, and then you dry it. He showed her very expertly how to clean the floor. And he used that example also when he's describing Lord Chaitanya's appearance, that Lord Chaitanya, he exhibited the example of a devotee. So Prabhupada used the example, just like if I clean the floor to show you how to do it, that doesn't mean I'm a floor cleaner. I'm just showing you the example. So Lord Chaitanya is the example, because Lord Chaitanya also cleaned the Gundicha temple, Gundicha Marjana, and he collected more dirt than anybody else. And he, so Radha Madhava, the deities in Mayapur, the main deities, they were actually installed, you know, anyone? You're 1980. And this Radhapad, anyone heard of him? Radhapad, he was one of the disciples of Bhavananda Prabhu. Bhavananda was a big guru at one time. Anyway, so Radhapad was one of his disciples. He was a wealthy man in Calcutta. And he had a dream. And he dreamt that a young renunciate came to him, asked for some money. And this was a dream he had. So he gave some money. And then he had another dream where this young man came back and he appeared and he said, "I want the money back." Oh, no, he said, "I've come to give you the money back. Please take the money." And Radhapad said, "No, I can't take the money back. You're a sadhu. You don't take money back from sadhus." So then the form changed into Srila Prabhupada in his dream. And he said, "I want you to get deities and for the temple in Mayapur." So those were the deities that were made for the Mayapur temple, Radha Madhava. And then the four gopis, because originally there was only four gopis surrounding them, for many years actually, they were established in about 1982. And then the other four gopis, if you've seen, they look very different kind of mood they have, very different appearance than the ones on the left. They were established later. Anyway, so that's a bit of history. So, Radha Madhava, well, there's the Lita Madhava. There's a beautiful book by Rupa Goswami, Lita Madhava. And he says, this one verse, it says, "My dear auspicious Radharani, your body is the source of all beauty." This is Krishna speaking. "Your red lips are soft and..." Yeah, okay. Thanks. Your face bears the aroma of a lotus flower. Your sweet words defeat the virtues of the cuckoo. And your limbs are cooler than the pulp of sandalwood. All my transcendental senses are overwhelmed in ecstatic pleasure by tasting you, who are completely decorated by beautiful qualities." That's from the Lalita Madhava. So Madhava means nectar. So Krishna is he's the supreme enjoyer. He's always seeking the nectar. And that is actually, because I was reading this statement by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. And he was saying that, you know, Christianity, Muslim, animal, tree, anything is completely useless until people, this is a statement by Bhaktisiddhanta, I read it the other day, is all completely useless until people actually engage in devotional service. So, Krishna consciousness is the, Prabhupada explains, this is the eternal nature of the soul. Just like water is wet, sugar is sweet, salt is salty. The eternal nature of the living entity is to serve Krishna. But unfortunately, people come, thank you very much, to forget Krishna. They come to the material world to forget Krishna. So therefore, Krishna, he comes here to remind us. And he comes in many different forms. All of his forms are very beautiful. Even when he appeared as Matsya, it's explained in the Gauda Samhita that of all the different types of gopis, and the one class of gopis, they had seen, they were daughters of Varuna, and they had seen the Matsya avatar. And they were so attracted, but of course, Matsya couldn't really reciprocate. So they appeared as gopis in Vrindavan. It's amazing, isn't it? And so many other personalities, like the rishis in Dandakaranya, the women of Ayodhya, they saw Lord Ram, but he only had one way. He couldn't reciprocate, so they appeared as gopis. So Krishna, he has unlimited potency, and all these personalities appear just for Krishna's pleasure. So the Goswamis, they describe Krishna's activities very, very elaborately. And there's so many books about the Goswamis. And even though Krishna Das Kaviraj, for instance, he's not one of the Goswamis, but he wrote Govinda Lilamrita. And very beautiful narrations about Krishna's pastimes and activities. But what was his mood? That his mood, if you read the chapter about how he, Lord Nityananda, appeared before him. So, Lord Nityananda, he appeared in a dream. And so, Krishnadas Kaviraj, he was describing how he was so fallen, even though he descended from the spiritual world. Just imagine that somebody descends from the spiritual world and they describe themselves as lower than a worm in stool. That's pretty amazing. So the residents of Vrindavan, they have this incredible humility. So he was saying, you know, anybody who says my name will become completely contaminated. And he said, it's only because Lord Nityananda, he's always so happy and so kind that he sees everybody. He gives his mercy to everybody. So Lord Nityananda appeared in the dream because because Krishnadas Kaviraj, he felt bad because his brother had offended one devotee. Who was that devotee? He offended because he didn't offer him respect. What was his name? Miniketana Ramdas. Miniketana Ramdas was a great devotee of Lord Nityananda. And he was very unusual. He would jump on people's backs while they were paying obeisances. He would play his flute. And he was very playful, but he was, just by seeing him, people would actually cry because he was so absorbed in love of Krishna and love of Lord Nityananda. So when his brother didn't offer respect to him, because he was a devotee, because he was so devoted to Lord Nityananda, he became offended. So anyway, Krishnadas Kaviraj, he didn't really know what to do. So then Lord Nityananda appeared in the dream and he said, immediately go to Vrindavan. So then Krishnadas Kaviraj, he said, you go to Vrindavan and everything wonderful will happen. So he went to Vrindavan. He was very old. And so he described, well, he wrote the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he wrote the Govinda Lilamrita. So the Goswamis, they have written so many wonderful books describing Krishna's activities in the spiritual world. And the whole idea is to attract our minds. Because even though, you know, we practice devotional service for years and years, but the whole idea is to hear about Krishna, to think about Krishna, everything for Krishna. Like the gopis, when Krishna left Vrindavan, they were completely devastated. They were going around, where is Krishna? Where is Radha? They were just dying because they couldn't live without Krishna. So this is the example that we're supposed to follow, the example of the gopis, that they have so much love for Krishna that they'll do anything for Krishna. So this is a very lofty goal because, you know, at least I know my heart is like a desert. I have no love. But the amazing thing about Krishna is, because he's Krishna, he's all attractive, that when you hear about him, you develop love of Krishna. And ultimately, Prabhupada said, work now, samadhi later. So he describes how, you know, we should do laborious work. Laborious means like hard labor to satisfy Krishna. Just like Prabhupada did. Prabhupada went through so many austerities to please Krishna. Just like the Bhagavad Gita, the manuscript was stolen. Just imagine 700 pages, you write all the commentary and it's stolen. And he could have just said, well, you know, it's Krishna's mercy. He doesn't want me to do this. I'll just forget about it. But no, Prabhupada, he was so determined. He wrote the whole thing again. Prabhupada, he is such an amazing devotee. Just think of how much service he did. When anybody had any doubts, how many letters did he write? He wrote thousands of letters. What he did, you know, to dispel the doubts, to establish Krishna consciousness. Just like if you read the Adi Lila, some of the purports to a lot of the verses about Nityananda Tattva, Lord Chaitanya's, you know, appearance, the reasons for his appearance. The purports are very, very long. They're very philosophical. He could have just jumped to Krishna's pastimes, all the nectar, but he wanted to make sure that people understood that this is a very deep and philosophical culture. He didn't want to take any chances that people got it wrong as far as the philosophy. So he, great austerities. And, you know, Prabhupada went through so much. We're so fortunate. We have so many conversations we can listen to where Prabhupada is talking to different people. Dr. Patel, he's having arguments with Dr. Patel because Dr. Patel is an impersonalist. He's encouraging devotees who don't follow very well. or explaining how to worship Tulsi Devi. And if you don't have any common sense, if you got no brain, get somebody else to tell you how to do it. So Prabhupada went through so much effort to establish Krishna consciousness on a very deep level. So, but the whole idea is that, you know, Krishna prema, that if you follow properly, you get Krishna prema. So of course we know that also Prabhupada was very wary about devotees prematurely jumping into trying to understand Radha Krishna Leela. So in LA back in 1974, I think, you know, he chastised some devotees because they were just focusing on hearing Krishna and Radharani's pastimes. And then he said that actually you should worship the deities in the mood of Lakshmi Narayan. Very reverential. Yeah. So, you know, the LA deities are called Rukmini Dwarkadish. It's not, you know, like Radha Vrindavan Chandra. So he wanted to establish that there's a certain procedure to get to the highest level. That in the beginning, you have to be very respectful and very awestruck, like that. But ultimately, the goal is to, you know, dance with Krishna. So this is a bit of a contradiction, but the point is that by practicing Krishna consciousness properly, one can come to that point, hopefully. I'm hoping that one day, maybe in many lifetimes, we'll actually develop a little love. But, you know, that is why all the Goswamis wrote the books, so that we could hear about Krishna, so that we could become attracted to Krishna. And his pastimes are very sweet, like the books written by Raghunath Das Goswami, like the Pearl Story. You know the Pearl Story? I'm sure you do. The Pearl Story is a beautiful story. And it just demonstrates how Krishna has so much fun with the gopis. There's another book, The Pearl Story, is about when Krishna grew some pearls. It's a beautiful story. How Krishna wanted to decorate his cows with some pearls. And so he asked Mother Yasoda, please give me your best pearls. I want to decorate my cows with the pearls. So Radharani said, everybody knows that pearls don't go on trees. But Krishna said, well, please, because I'm going to plant them in the ground, and I'm going to grow some pearl trees. So she finally agreed to give him some pearls. So he planted some pearls. Well, actually, he had already asked the gopis for their pearls. Please give me some of your pearls. I want to decorate my cows. But the gopis, they didn't agree. They said, no, we want to keep our pearls for our cows. You go grow your own pearls. So he managed to beg a few pearls from his Mother Yashoda. And he planted the pearls in the ground. And he... You know, everybody was laughing, the gopis were laughing, what a crazy idea. But he watered the pearls with milk from his best cows. So he got his best cow's milk and he watered the pearls. And very soon, these beautiful little sprouts came out of the ground. And the gopis were looking and they were kind of getting a bit worried. And so they thought, well, we must, you know, we'll also plant some pearls in the ground. Anyway, Krishna's pearl plants developed into beautiful plants and they had amazing pearls on them. And so Krishna was very happy with himself. Meanwhile, the gopis, their little plants they planted, became thorn trees. So Krishna was taking his pearls and he was decorating his cows, and the gopis, they wanted to get some of his pearls because he had the best pearls now. So they came and they begged for the pearls, and Krishna said, no, I just remember you wouldn't give me any of your pearls, you're just gonna have to. So anyway, they bribed him with some furtive glances and some, you know, promise of future enjoyment. So he gave them some pearls. So these are Krishna's beautiful pastimes. Krishna has so many wonderful pastimes. And so, in hearing about Krishna, naturally, you know, our hearts melt. And we can chant and think of Krishna. Of course, it's not so easy because the mind is always distracted, but at least try to hear the holy name. But don't give up, because basically the holy name is the only hope. And the holy name is the medicine. So just like if you have an infection and you take antibiotics, you have a very poisonous arm with lots of pus. So you take antibiotics, but if you stop taking the antibiotics, then you might think the arm is getting better, and you stop taking the antibiotics, it can easily come back. So the holy name is the medicine that if you stop chanting, then your material desires will come back. So even though we may not have any taste for the chanting, because this is the example we get from all the great acharyas, practically every single one of them, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, Narottam Das Thakur, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, they all say they have no taste for the holy name. So we should never give up our chanting, because that is our only hope. And of course, we have to chant 16 rounds a day. That is the what's the word? The prescription. Like the doctor gives a prescription, so that's a prescription. So we have to follow that. And then, you know, we're guaranteed. So I'll finish here. Hare Krishna. Anyone have any comments, questions, corrections, reflections, additions? Yeah.
My recollection is that Radhapad also, he was the one that donated to build the conch boat.
He donated a lot of, he donated a lot of, I remember. Yeah. Radhapad, yeah, he had a lot of money. He was very attached to the deities. Yeah. He would buy out, he would pay for the outfits for the deities. He would go there every week, every weekend. He's very old. Anything else?
Who can you tell the story of Aurangzeb?
Trying to destroy the Radha Govinda temple in Vrindavan.
Radha Govinda temple. Well, I don't know the whole story, but Radha Govinda temple, you've probably all been there. It's an amazing building, very beautiful building. And it was originally 7 stories high. And apparently, I mean, doesn't sound too logical, but he was in Delhi and he saw the light burning on top of the Radha Govinda. There's a long way to see the light. But anyway, he, somehow or other, he was envious of the beauty of the temple. So, you know, he had 5 stories dismantled. I mean, that the carving and the work on that temple is incredible. Yes, Guru?
Yes, I was just reading up on that.
I was just, you know, they're now saying that they're probably parapets, you know, those, the taller part that you dismantle were like the towering parapets, as opposed to setting, you know, 5 more full stories. You know, like on top of like Krishna Balaram temple is this dome.
Yeah.
So the dome was like 7 stories high, but they weren't knocking down 7 floors.
Okay.
That's what some of these ISKCON art from books are saying now.
Okay. Anyway, Aurangzeb was envious and he destroyed the temple. I don't know what happened.
As he was, what I was told by whom.
Oh, you know the story. You wanted to tell the story.
Well, no, I wanted to. I didn't really want to tell the story.
That's okay.
But what I heard was that as this dismantling was taking place, that there was some really violent kind of meteorological event. And the Aurangzeb stopped the dismantling of the temple because he took it as a sign from Allah that he was doing something wrong.
Could be. Ladies, anything? Anyone else? Okay. Shishurada Madhava Kija, Chaitanya Charamrita Kija, Shri Prabhupada Kija.